Well, if you're catching the beginning of the show, hopefully you have not spent all of your summer wasting time. Anna Egge there from North Dakota. It's 11 o'clock here at WFERLP in South Royalton, Vermont, Royalton Community Radio, radio of the people, by the people, and for the people. It's time for Green Zine, and we are cautiously optimistic that we're going to be joined by one of the leading environmental activists on the planet, and he is a Vermonter. There's enough of a clue for you there. Henry's going to join me, and we'll bring our guest on at about 20 after. We do want to thank the folks that keep Green Zine on the air. I'm about to make a trip with a bunch of redemption. Some returnables to get some money for the radio station. Yes, indeed. The Yes We Can Collective helping us out. Also, we want to thank the folks at Solarfest. They just booked another event over there. Good news for them. First Branch Coffee Company, the Upper Pass Beer Company, Daniel Leibowitz, Tom Wells, Bale Building a Local Economy. Boy, they were great. They had a booth, and Elena Greenlee had a chance to speak from the stage at FledgeFest, real community organization, community event. Glad to have a lot of partnerships out there. Also, Solaflect and First Branch Coffee Company and Wit and Grit. Well, we're going to be talking about the sun. The sun is out right now. Here's a version of a classic Beatles song as performed by James Taylor, Yo-Yo Ma, and George Harrison on Green Zine. We'll be right back.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Little darling, the smiles return to their faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Sun, 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 here he comes. Sun, 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 here he comes. Oh, sun, 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 here he comes. Mm-hmm, here he comes. Little darling, feel the ice slowly melting. Little darling, seems like years since it's been clear. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. It's all right.
Well, that's a pretty powerful trio there. James Taylor, Yo-Yo Ma, and George Harrison with Here Comes the Sun. And here comes Henry Swayze. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Todd. I love the fact that Yo-Yo Ma throws his weight behind so many other forms of music besides classical music.
Oh, yeah.
It's just just magic what he does.
Yeah, one of the great albums he came out with, along with Chris Thiele, originally from Nickel Creek and now with the Punch Brothers, and also great bass player Edgar Meyer. And I believe that Yo-Yo Ma also toured some national parks and was playing music there. So definitely an environmentalist, just like you, except I'm not sure how sharp you are on the cello, Henry.
I don't think that I would, people wouldn't hang around to listen to me. I would probably enjoy just, I have had an opportunity to both play a viola and a cello. And it's drawing a bow across the cello, whether you know how to play it or not. Just feeling the resonance of the instrument is quite lovely.
Yeah.
So I have a granddaughter who plays the cello, and so I had an opportunity to tinker with hers. Celebrated Christmas, and she led the Christmas carols on her cello.
Wow, that's a special moment there, Henry. I like it. Well, jam-packed show here as usual. I'll leave it to you to reveal who our guest is going to be in about 14 minutes or so.
Okay, well, we have Bill McKibben and his new book, Here Comes the Sun.
Not
to, I think we've played the theme song for it.
We may have just done that.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's been a few years since we've had Bill on. I think this might be his third visit. I'm glad he's making time because he's normally talking to global networks, but he's going to talk to a low-power FM station. That's great.
He is a really busy person, and he said that he expects to be able to do it, but in case he gets the rug pulled out from underneath it, we'll have to just wing it and present the material.
We're prepared to wing it, but we're also prepared if Bill comes on. I think it would be great. We were talking about saving files. Definitely save the file and maybe edit, and maybe we could share our talk with Bill with other community radio stations around the state.
Very good. We can do that.
Yeah, we like to share.
All of our files are all of our previous shows, except for the last two, which I've neglected to get posted yet. All of our shows for this, virtually all the ones for this last year or year and a bit, are up on our links at the bottom of the first page of the radio station.
Yeah, of the website at WFVR.org.
You go to the bottom of that and you click on that and you can listen to any of those previous shows, and you can skip through those shows. You can go right to the interview by moving the time bar. And so it's quite a resource.
Yeah, very handy. Appreciate you putting in the time on that.
Yeah, so the... I'm going to throw this in right now.
Okay.
So, in the show notes that are already up for today's show, there's a whole series of websites that came off a discussion from the Vermont Healthy Soils Coalition, and these are information on the Republicans dismantling climate science. And my comment is, or someone else's comment I captured for this title was, they're taking the attitude, well, if we can't measure it, it doesn't exist. So they're just in climate denial. And there's a whole series of scientific research that they're dismantling. They are removing websites that already have the science up that we've paid for putting up, and they're making them disappear. They are selling off satellites so that the government no longer can gather information from those and is useful for predicting storms and for, you know, doing things that I think we kind of desperately need. Certainly not for, there's one on cloud updrafts. And as a glider pilot, I am all about updrafts because that's what keeps gliders in the air. And that was a Colorado State satellite that was going to go up to understand those updrafts. And those updrafts and that kind of work is how you figure out how the small rain cycle works and how you rehydrate the earth. And they don't want to know about it. So anyway, and there's more beyond that, another two or three. But they're in the show notes, and if you want to look at those links, you can do that. You know, I've come to the conclusion that this is what we're watching is tyranny unfolding. It's tyranny is not a someone came in with tanks and took over. It's we've got someone in charge who doesn't care about the law and doesn't want to know about science and the truth and wants to push back very hard against anybody who is causing resistance to that person being in total control. And that's what we're seeing. And you know, I think one of the places that there's still some hope out there are that there is an enormous number of court cases that have been filed and a lot of things that are not allowed. And I think all that work takes money. And if you want to support some of it, I think that's an excellent place for whether that's the the Environmental Defense Fund, as the title says, they are involved in that. The American Civil Liberties Association, they are certainly in the middle of it. You can do a little Google search about who's being most effective at doing it.
Yeah, and these organizations have a long track record of defending the environment. When I was talking with Gus Speth the other day on WordStream, and he was one of the founding fathers of the Natural Resources Defense Council, that these nonprofits and other groups are critical to the population, the democratic grassroots population of the United States, and when it comes to the environment, of protecting laws that have been in place since the President Nixon, of all people, signed some of these landmark environmental laws that are being just shredded. So, yeah, if you want to support them either with your voice, your feet, or your dollars, we would highly recommend you do that. Henry, it's time to maybe move along to Bird Note because we don't want to cut Bill McKibben short. And interesting that you chose a word that I've been seeing a lot over the last few weeks because Fledgling Farmstead put on the fourth annual Fledge Fest, and you have chosen a Bird Note that's called Where Do Fledglings Go? So we're going to listen to that right now here on, I almost said WordStream. No, that show already happened, but on GreenZine.
Hi, I'm Jessica France, BirdNote's Development Director.
Well, we were going to skip. Sorry about that, Jessica. We were going to skip that part and go here.
More than ever. Please donate today at birdnote.org, and thank you.
This is BirdNote. By late summer, birds hatched in spring have left the nest and likely seen the last help from their parents in getting fed. Where do they go? Hang around the old neighborhood? Or strike out for new lands. The young of migratory birds will head south in late summer or fall, in the pattern of their species. But as a general rule, non-migratory birds born this spring will need to find an unoccupied territory, so they disperse more widely than the adults that are already established. In the case of the Buick's wren, closely studied in Oregon, the young songbirds said goodbye to their parents' territory by 5 weeks of age, They dispersed to suitable countryside within half a mile to a mile. And within another few months, young males had already set up their own territories. But compared to young bald eagles, young Buick's wrens are mere stay-at-homes. When new-fledged bald eagles leave their parents' territory, they embark on a nomadic life, sometimes flying hundreds of miles in a day. That may take them all the way across the continent. When they reach adulthood 4 years later, though, they'll often nest roughly in the area where they were hatched, give or take about 250 miles. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Always good avian information there on Bird Note, Henry.
I was amazed to hear that the birds that are like chickadees and people like that that are likely to hang around clear out of their parents' territory and have to establish one of their own. And it happened so quickly, five weeks after getting themselves to the ability to get out of the nest. I watch the birds on Jane's bird feeder here in Burlington, where we don't have any bears coming to maraud the bird feeders. And you could see those young birds, and then they get thinned out. They were disappearing, and now I know why. I didn't. So you have some. So you know, I want to apologize for the downer we started the show off. And I believe when we get to Bill McKibben, we'll have an upper. So I felt I could do a downer in order to have Bill point out how rosy things could be if we just treated it right.
I'm gonna delve into the EV thing here for just a couple minutes, and then
and
don't go away quite yet, Henry. We got about 3 minutes till we bring on Bill McKibben. So this is on the good news front. Although we didn't initially participate in the multiple states, I think 16 states sued the federal government about its withdrawal of funding that was guaranteed for states to build out their high-speed charging network on the interstates. But this put out by Sean Robinson, who writes about the environment regularly for Vermont Digger, would highly recommend you check out vtdigger.org. After cutting $16 million for our state in February, the U.S. Department of Transportation basically has backtracked a little bit and will allow access to the money under some other guidelines. And our state is taking steps to resume a long-planned build-out of these EV chargers. And President Trump, well, he didn't have much to do with this decision. But back in February, suspended funding for what's called NEVI, the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, which was created under President Biden as part of the 2021 bipartisan infrastructure law. And in Vermont, that meant almost $16 million was headed this way, $9 million which had already been committed to help build high-speed chargers in 11 communities in the state. Apparently, the one in Randolph already has enough money to finish its build-out with this additional money not coming here. But it does mention at the end of the article some other places that are due to get the money, including Bill McKibben's hometown of Middlebury. Yeah, here it is. Randolph and Wilmington can move ahead with their high-speed charging. So that's good news. More good news on the EV front, Henry. And a little bit later, I'll give information out about an EV expo that's coming up on Saturday, the 6th of September. But the chargers here at the Vermont Law School, in fact, I'm hearing through some inside channels that there may even be more level 2 chargers being added. What do you think of that, Henry? When you come to town, you'll be able to have multiple places to charge your EV.
That is lovely, and I got a call from Bill McKibben while you were talking about that, and I have Bill on the line. Let's see if I'm successful at doing that. Bill, are you with us?
Indeed I am. How are you?
Oh.
Hey, that's magic. It worked.
That's the unmistakable voice of Bill McKibben, because we hear you on a lot of other larger media outlets, Bill. Great to have you back with us here on Green Zine.
We really
with you. I take it it's as pretty a day in Royalton as it is in Ripton.
Yeah.
These cool nights are a treasure, I got to say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. A little bit of early fall. The trees are stressed, but it does feel good. Good sleeping weather, and you sound very well rested to speak with us today about your new book and about a lot of other things in the environment.
Indeed.
Yeah. I love what you've put together and where you're going with it after having written the book, which has only been on the bookshelf available to the public for a week. But you probably put your pen down on that quite a number of months ago.
No, actually, this was a strange experience for me. I didn't actually even start writing the book until January.
Wow.
And I was able to keep updating it through the end of June, so I've been able to follow all the baleful things happening in Washington and all the really fascinating things happening all around the world, even over the last few months. Because this is such a kind of breaking story, this story of the just monumental and very, very recent surge in sun and wind around the planet, that I wanted to keep it very up to the minute. And thank heaven the publishers understood and were willing to go the extra mile. So it's for a book between hardcovers, it's about as up to date as one can get.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I read the book. I bought it and read it, and it certainly isn't lagging. It doesn't feel as though it's old. But I do see from your newsletter that that where you're going with it next, trying to park great piles of solar panels out there all over the world for people to pick them up and take them home and make the transition.
Yes, and in this country, we're busy preparing for Sunday on September 21st, the fall equinox. So that was the other reason for the book to come out now, so that I could sort of turn book tour over the next month or so into a organizing tour for that. We've got hundreds and hundreds of events scheduled around the country and a bunch scheduled around the Green Mountain State for September 21st, which people can find out all about at sunday.earth.
Yeah, I made note of one that's happening in our area. I'm sure there are others that are closer, maybe in Randolph or even here in South Royalton. But folks are going to gather on the New Hampshire side of the Connecticut River there near Dartmouth College and walk across to the Norwich Green and have a major event on Sunday. Is that something that you and 350 VT put together, this idea of Sunday?
No, it's 350 VT, I'm sure, is helping out, and I'm sure that Third Act in Vermont is helping out, and I'm doing none of the work at all.
Oh, good for you. You're too busy on the tour.
My job is to be sort of trying to rouse people at the national level to get it done, and then, this has been always been our kind of organizing strategy since the earliest days of 350 is sort of potluck supper, I can come up with a theme and a date, and then everyone has to do the actual work. And I do my best to help coordinate it all.
You're a master of delegation. Very good.
That's it. Yeah. Tom Sawyer with the whitewashed fence. Yes, that's me.
Yeah. Well, three cheers for your having that ability and somehow having kept yourself from not getting into the weeds so much that you couldn't continue to lead the band.
I gotta say, this has been such an interesting book for me, because we're in such a dark place on the planet around the climate crisis, and in our country around the flickering out of our democracy. In some ways, it's the darkest moment I remember. But there is one good big thing happening on the planet, and that's the one that I get to bring people's attention to right now. And it really is big, and it really is good. For the first time in 40 years of working on the climate crisis, I feel like we've got not a solution, but a scalable response that will at least allow us to knock some tenths of a degree off how hot the planet is going to get. And since each tenth of a degree, the scientists tell us, moves another 100 million human beings from a comfortable climate zone to a dangerous one, that seems well worth all our work.
Yeah, and I think you're talking to our good friend that is shining down on both Ripton and Royalton today. The sun, in both in your book, which is called Here Comes the Sun, but also in your recent Substack, you talk about the amazing growth of solar in very unlikely places. Some of the smaller African countries are really ramping up big time their use of solar.
Absolutely, and this is a really wonderful part of this story. Most of the work, though there are great things going on in California and in Texas and in parts of Europe, most of the work on this has been done in China. That's the place that's really committed and really pushed. And China is, we've heard of petrostates. China is the world's first electrostate. But they're producing so many solar panels that they're leaking out across all of China's trade networks. So the first great story like this was in Pakistan, and it happened last year. Pakistanis who had a expensive and unreliable electric grid just started buying those cheap Chinese solar panels and going on TikTok to learn how to put them together. And if you were watching on Google Earth, you could see the panels just sprouting across the rooftops of Lahore and Karachi. And, if you were studying the numbers, Pakistanis built the equivalent of half the country's national electric grid in 8 months by themselves last year. That's pretty amazing. And now that those same Chinese trade networks are bringing those same cheap Chinese solar panels all across Africa, including in lots and lots of places where people have never had electricity of any kind before. I've gotten to see some of these village microgrids going up. I was in Ghana not that long ago watching in a village where until the day before when they turned on their 40-panel solar microgrid, they'd never had electricity of any kind. And it was, hot as hell because it was right on the equator. And I'm a Vermonter, so I'm not really that good with excess heat. And they kept handing me, cold bottles of water to drink, and I was grateful. It took me half an hour in my kind of clueless Western way to figure out why they were so proud to be handing me these bottles of water. Until the day before, there'd never been anything cold in this town, and never been a refrigerator.
No.
You realize in a flash how much we take for granted and how great it is to be able to see that happening and to imagine that it's happening without destroying the planet around us the way that, our consumption has now destroyed so much. Makes it twice as good.
Wow. So I know within the United States, I've been quite a student of the electric grid and served on Vermont 350's electricity committee. Yes. And not so much in Vermont, but in a way, the bigger picture, it's data centers that are gobbling up and driving the infrastructure.
Yes.
For taxing the infrastructure for our electricity system, and that they want power faster than they can get it any other way except for really solar.
This is what makes the current administration's stance on things so mind-bogglingly moronic. On the one hand, the president declared an urgent energy emergency on his first day in office because he said we needed to provide more power so that we could win the AI against China. And then the president and his troops have done everything they can to discourage the only source of really quick and cheap power that could possibly supply this need, sun and wind. And when I say discourage, I mean last Friday, the administration issued a stop work order on a wind farm off the coast of Rhode Island that was 85% complete, just told them to walk away from it. This kind of stuff would be insane at any point, but right now it's just completely nuts. They've increased the demand with all these data centers, and they have constricted the supply. So you don't need to be a Nobel Prize winner in economics to know what's going to happen. The price of electricity is already up about 10% around the country this year, and that's just going to keep happening. Who knows exactly what's going on? They obviously have taken huge amounts, $446 million, I think, in political money from the fossil fuel industry in the last election cycle. And, you know, obviously the president has some kind of a bug in his head about wind power and his Scottish golf courses. But it's all just adding up to complete disaster for American consumers, not to mention the fact that we're just handing the Chinese the technological lead for the rest of the century and the most important economic transformation on the planet, clean energy. This is stuff that was invented here. The solar cell was invented in New Jersey in 1954. But it's the Chinese who are going to dominate the world with them.
You know, I want to come back stateside real quick here, Bill. I'm going to pull three red states out of the hat: Texas, Iowa, and North Dakota. And all three of those states have pretty high levels of renewable energy generation. Certainly Iowa and Texas are leading the way with wind. They are red states. Do you have a sense that we know that the current administration has the fossil fuel industry in its pocket, and they're each washing each other's hands, and they need to keep doing that a lot. But is there going to be some pushback from both state governments in red states, like the three that I named, and industry against these very poor decisions?
Well, it's a very good question. So there's pushback at the state level. Texas is fascinating. It's putting up more renewable energy than anyone else. The fossil fuel industry tried to use this year's session of the Texas state legislature to end that. They wanted to pass a bunch of bills that people thought would pass. The most egregious was widely described as DEI for natural gas. If you wanted to put up 5 megawatts of solar, they'd make you put up 5 megawatts of natural gas, too. But out of the woodwork across Texas came especially rural people saying, you know what? Solar farm is how we pay for our school in our community. This is what keeps the old folks home open. Do not do this. And the Texas legislature backed right away. None of the Republicans seem willing to stand up to Trump on anything. So at the federal level, we're just seeing carnage. But at the state level, it's possible that there's all kinds of possibilities. Let me add another state to your list, Utah. You guys know that across Europe over the last 2 years, there's been this explosion in what we're calling balcony solar. These simple systems, if you're an apartment dweller without a roof, you just go to IKEA or Best Buy in Stuttgart and come home with, you know, 300 euros later with a solar panel designed to just be hung from your balcony and plugged directly into the wall. No fancy equipment, no electricians, no nothing. Often they're supplying 20%, 25% of the power that the apartment dweller is using. Well, those are illegal everywhere in the United States, except that progressive bastion, the state of Utah, where the state legislature unanimously passed enabling legislation earlier this year after a state senator who I've talked to, a pediatrician, after he just stood up and said, well, how come the people can do this in Frankfurt and in Brussels, but they can't do it in Provo and Salt Lake City? And no one had a good answer, so now you can. And there are videos all over YouTube of Utahns putting up proudly their new solar balcony systems. So I don't think it's impossible to work across ideological lines here. I hope not.
Good.
So how do we get that plug and play adopted? I mean, the utility companies are not really very anxious to have this happen to them because all of a sudden they're selling less electricity.
Yes, this is a big problem, and you need some legislators and things willing to stand up to them a little. But I think this is something we could probably do in Vermont if people went to work on it. It should be the kind of thing that the Phil Scotts of the world would approve of. You know, there's a kind of DIY element to it and so on. Certainly we're going to try. It's one of the things doing Sunday is along with kind of celebrating the rise of renewable energy and trying to knock it out of the alternative category in people's brains, we also want to really push easier permitting all over the country. For rooftop solar in general, you know, in America it costs three times as much as it does in Australia or the EU to get a rooftop system up on top of your house. And a little bit of that reason is tariffs on solar panels, but a much bigger reason is our completely Byzantine system of permitting. We have 15,000 municipalities in this country. Each one has their own building code, their own inspector. Takes forever. They've got other things to do. You know, if you're in Spain or in, you know, New Zealand or someplace, you Monday morning, you decide you want solar on your roof. You call your contractor. It's up there by Friday pumping out energy. Now, we could do that here, and there's an easy technical fix that really helps. The National Renewable Energies Laboratory built something called the Solar App Plus that they've since spun off from the nonprofit. It allows for instantaneous permitting. The contractor just enters in, types in what equipment he's going to be putting on a roof that's connected to what grid, and if it all works, then they get an instant permit and can go to work. California, Maryland, and New Jersey have approved this now, mandated it. It seems like it would be just the kind of thing that we could do in Vermont as well to make it easier for our army of solar installers who are now going to have to work without federal tax credits, thanks to Trump. So they're going to need some breaks to make this as cost-effective for Vermonters as possible. It's a good thing for local legislators to be working on, I think.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, the sort of instinctive response is, well, there must be some safety issue here that, you know, we're preventing with all. Stuff is not particularly dangerous. 40% of homes in Australia have solar panels on the roof. If there was an epidemic of rooftop solar panel fires, you can be damn sure that Fox News would be showing them to you 24/7. So I really think this is a place where we should take note of the larger emergency and get to work here.
It's interesting that the Australian model on David Roberts on Volts did a podcast on that and said there's so much solar energy being generated in Australia that they can really now consider making green steel. They can
yep.
Take the carbon burning out of
yep.
producing steel.
No, so, absolutely right.
Yeah,
yeah.
To,
this, is,
yeah
you know, to, this is magic. This is the loop getting completed when you start really having abundant green energy.
Yeah, I like how we're hopscotching around the globe. Let's stay in Australia and So, Bill, we know that Australia, one of their biggest exports is coal, mostly to yes. Southeast Asia. Is that all? Is this growth of solar there, which is amazing in that country because they do get so much sun, is that affecting their coal industry, or are those just traveling on different tracks?
No. Australia is still trying to export coal and gas. The thing that will affect that is what happens in the Asian countries they're sending it to. And this is exactly the same thing that we're facing in the U.S., where, you know, we're the biggest exporter of gas in the world, and President Trump is using his tariffs to extort other countries into exporting more of it. You get lower tariffs if you promise to buy, you know, $700 billion worth of liquefied natural gas. That may work in the very short run, but I think the signs are already pretty clear that what it's really doing over the medium and longer term is convincing all those countries that they don't want to be dependent on anyone for their fuel supply. Why would anyone sign up to be dependent on a country as fickle and erratic as ours for its energy supply? Instead, in the last few weeks, Indonesia's, which is the fourth largest country in the world by population, has announced plans to build 100 gigawatts of solar over the next 5 years. And today, Malaysia, I don't know, sixth, seventh biggest country in the world, announced plans to dramatically scale up their solar in order to become much more energy self-sufficient. I think that's the real story. People are looking around now and saying, you know, I had to choose between two different models. The Chinese one is looking more attractive for energy. They're really figuring out how to cut their dependence on the rest of the world. Chinese oil imports are down substantially, and LNG imports down substantially this year, as are their carbon emissions. And it's because, A, they're producing so much solar energy. China in May was putting up gigawatts of solar panels a day. A gigawatt's the rough large coal-fired power plant. So they were putting up a large coal-fired power plant's worth of solar panels every 8 hours. Okay.
Wow.
They're so much, and they're now leading the world in the technologies that make use of all that electricity, most notably the EV. China's the biggest car market in the world, and last month, well more than half the cars there came with a plug hanging out the back. So if you're a, you know, U.S. oil giant, it's got to be a little discouraging to you that the markets where you were expecting to see growth in the decades ahead are now going just the opposite direction. The same if you're trying to export coal or whatever else. This explosion in renewable energy is really bad news for the hydrocarbon industry. They know that, and it's why they've scrambled so hard. I mean, last year when he was running for president, Donald Trump said to them, give me $1 billion and I will give you anything I want. As I said, they came up with about $500 million, and that turned out to be enough.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that... go ahead, Henry.
I know from a personal point of view that I really like the idea of being energy independent. You know, and if I can...
Your castle, man.
Yeah. And if I can charge my EV on my own solar panels and not be tied into... to the machinations of wherever grid prices are going to go, which Vermont has done a marvelously good job of controlling. I do think that it just feels yes. good to me to be doing that.
It feels good in many ways and at many scales. I mean, come on for a minute. How the geopolitics of our planet would have been different for the last 70 years if oil had been of trivial value.
Mm-hmm.
How many wars and coups and terrorist plots and assassinations and everything else we could have avoided. And think about what a gift it would be to our children and grandchildren if we left them instead in a world where energy, one of the two most important commodities that we buy, was available to everyone locally easily from where they were. That's our possibility right now. We should seize it. And I think the real point is we should seize it quickly. Yes, economics will take us to where we need to go eventually. 30 years from now, we'll run this country and this wind, this world on sun and wind. But if it takes us anything like 30 years to get there, then it's going to be a broken planet that we run on sun and wind. It's already breaking, as you know. And so our job is to speed up this transition, hence Sunday and efforts like it.
Yeah, it makes me think of your first book that came out, The End of Nature. I forget, was that in the 80s, Bill, late 80s that book came out? Yeah, and we are certainly...
Wildly enough, it was back in the 1980s.
Yeah, well, all the way back in the Reagan years. But we're seeing nature being threatened by the anthropocentrism that at least in this country, with hyper-capitalism. But you do see a glimmer of hope. This has mostly been a very positive discussion with you about the growth of solar and the fact that it's kind of ironic that hyper-capitalism and the free market economy, if people are not there to buy your natural gas, not there anymore to buy the coal, that could end up being the tipping point that really puts renewables and clean energy back in the hands of the people.
Yes, this has been a fascinating story of the way that activism and engineering have worked together. You know, we got close once in the 1970s in this country when Jimmy Carter wanted to pour a huge amount of money into solar research and development with the explicit goal of having America produce 20% of its power from the sun by the year 2000. That goal was obviously interrupted by Ronald Reagan's ascension to power. He tore down the solar panels from the White House, and it was all drill, baby drill. The next big help came from German activists at the turn of the century. The Green Party in Germany held the balance of power in their parliamentary system, and they used that leverage to demand what was called the Energiewende, the energy transition. The German government agreed to pay a high price to Germans who put solar panels on their roof for the electricity that they were producing. And that was the demand, all those Germans wanting solar systems on their roof, that allowed the Chinese to start becoming expert at manufacturing these things. And the Chinese, you know, genius for low-cost manufacturing is what drove the price down and down and down and down till the point 4 or 5 years ago when it crossed an invisible line and it became cheaper to generate power from the sun and the wind than from burning coal and gas and oil. And that's what sort of set everybody off to the races.
Yes. So more thinking on how we get this to be, to get traction for it, to get it turned into the kind of movement that happened in Pakistan. I mean, that was obviously cheap solar panels that helped to fuel that transition and an unreliable grid, probably not with very good.
So much of it is just political. It's just organizing. But that organizing, you know, is about changing the laws to make it easy to do things like balcony solar or rooftop solar. But it's also about changing people's minds. We've labeled this stuff, we've filed it away in a folder in our brain under alternative energy for so long that that's how we've come to think of it. And we need to be reminded that it's not alternative energy anymore. The analogy that I've been using is we've been thinking of it as the whole foods of energy, you know, really nice stuff, but pricey.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's the Costco of energy now. It's cheap. It's available in bulk. It's on the shelf, ready to go. And getting that message out is crucial. If you can change how people think about things, then all the politics gets easier over time.
Yeah, and you were so good at getting the message out, Bill. And before we let you go, can you just give us not the complete schedule, but you're heading out to talk about Sunday and to talk about your book in various places. Where will some of your travels take you around the United States over the next month?
Name a city, and I'm afraid I'm there.
He's everywhere.
If this is Tuesday, it must be Houston kind of trips. But and I've reached the age where it's not quite as quite as appealing as it was when I was in my 20s. But it is fun to be going out everywhere to spread a particular word, because, boy, do we need something to feel a little bit of hope about, and something that in this case, I think, allows us to imagine not just cutting some of the danger out of climate change, at least a little, but something that also allows us to go after what Bernie's been calling the oligarchy a little bit too. I was up with Bernie on the day before yesterday in Burlington admiring his solar panels, and we were doing some filming for Sunday.
Yeah.
And as he was pointing out, you know, people like the Koch brothers, they were our biggest oil and gas barons. You know, they took advantage of the fact that this is a scarce resource that can be held in reserve and hoarded and doled out to become incredibly rich. And they used that money to help, you know, erode the foundations of our democratic institutions, making it all the easier for Donald Trump to just kick them over. So, allowing everyone on the planet, not everyone's ever going to have an oil well or a coal mine in their backyard, and no one's ever going to build a gas power plant, on their balcony. But imagining a world where everybody has access to the energy from the sun and the wind, that helps on a lot of fronts. And so we will do the best we can. No guarantees, but we've got something to fight for now anyway. So that's good.
Yeah, and something I'm thinking about locally that listeners can do and around the state, and as you said earlier in this interview, Bill, that state legislatures do have some power and are maybe a little bit easier to influence and to persuade. So I would suggest that folks in their individual legislative districts, once they're through reading your new book, Here Comes the Sun, pass it along to their legislator well before the next session starts in January.
Seems like a good idea to me, and I'll look forward to getting back to Vermont at some point. I'll just tell you the one part of this trip that I'm really looking forward to, and maybe I can bring some things back from for Vermont, is that the new Pope has summoned a few of us to Rome later in autumn for the 10th anniversary of Laudato Si, and to talk about exactly this topic. Vatican City, by year's end, will be the first fully solar-powered nation on the planet. They've just put up a big solar farm outside of Rome that will supply all the energy that Vatican City uses.
Wow.
So if Vatican City can do it, Vermont's next in alphabetical order anyway. We might as well get down to the same job. That's what I think.
Oh, that's great, Bill.
I love it.
You guys take care. I've got to jump.
All right.
Do some more stuff, but what a pleasure to be just thinking about Royalton, and I wish I was joining you at the Worthy Burger for a post-radio lunch.
And an IPA, Bill.
There you go.
Okay.
I didn't want to. Absolutely.
All right. Well, happy trails on your travels, and thanks for spending time with us here on Green
Z. Take care, gentlemen.
Yep.
Many thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. You did it again, Henry. You brought another stellar guest to the airwaves. Keep the tapes on that. You are tuned to Green Zine here, and Henry Swayze and Todd with you here for the last 3 or 4 minutes. I noticed one of our units is doing something kind of funny, but I think it'll be okay. It's the one I usually keep track of time with. Any sort of closing musings on what Bill said before we jump into a couple other things at the end of the show, Bill? I mean, Henry?
Henry, yeah. I really do highly recommend his book. He is just such a good wordsmith and has gather together so many little anecdotes and interesting facts and put them together in a compelling way. So buying his book, or if you are a newsletter subscriber or want to be, actually, it's a free newsletter, but he would love to have people chip a little bit in every month to help him with his work. And so just like the lawyers, Bill McKibben's a good leverage point to invest a little bit of support in. So that's my thought.
Yeah, and just real quick, I think it is really interesting that, what have been often maybe unfairly called, third world countries are realizing that getting power to the people, or getting the people to get the power, and regardless of where it comes from, obviously China leading the way with producing solar panels. And I'm sure there's some geopolitical interests in Beijing about doing that as well. But to have people, as you said, keep being very independent, or as independent as you can be in all walks of life, and it comes to energy and keeping the planet cleaner, that's really pretty key. I'm going to shift over to an event that's coming up in about 8 days from now on a Saturday, and let me bring up the right tab here. Yeah, here it is. They've been doing this for years, Henry, the Upper Valley Expo, and it's going to be happening at Lyman Point Park. That's the park that's right along the White River as it's about to join the Connecticut. So the Hartford Town Hall is right there before you. If you kept going straight, you'd end up in New Hampshire. So that's where it's happening, and it's coming up on Saturday, September 6th. And they're going to have all kinds of vehicles and all kinds of information. As far as a website, go to this one. Actually, we should probably talk to Mr. Roberts again, Dave Roberts of Drive Electric Vermont. Here's how you find out about EV expos that may be near you. DriveElectricMonth.org. And they're going to be talking about some remaining incentives that may be running out towards the end of the year. It gets underway at 11 o'clock and goes to 4 o'clock. There will be EVs, e-bikes, and exhibitors there right down at the Lyman Point Park EV Fundamentals. Hey, guess who's going to lead that? Dave Roberts from Drive Electric Vermont from 11 to 12 at the Hartford Town Hall. Jamie Gregory supplying some probably solar-powered electronic music. How about this one? We've talked about this, Henry. Using an EV for backup home power. Speaker will be.
That's what I do.
That's what you do. Yeah, that's what we did for the radio station a couple years ago. Took the EV up there, extension cord, stayed on the air. Yeah, that's being pretty resilient. A whole program on another one of our guests, Henry. You remember Carl Kremnitzer, who makes e-bikes in his basement? What's new and why we love them. He's going to be there from 12:30 to 1:15. And Sherry Boschert from the Lebanon Energy Advisory Committee doing a program at 2:15, how to buy or lease an EV. And then finally, the last program, and there's a raffle. I don't know what you can win with a raffle. Maybe more than a T-shirt. Maybe you could pick up a Rivian or something. No, I doubt it. A group format at 3 o'clock, EV driver's tips on long-distance travel, driving in winter, and more. Ellen Hender from Vital Communities providing information on that. So that's what's happening at EV Expo Saturday, the 6th of September, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. down there in the village of Hartford. Henry?
I would love to get a group going on hacking cheap do-it-yourself solar programs.
Okay.
So you aren't for the people who want to do do something for $1,000 instead of for $10,000.
Yeah. Well, you know who can be in that group is another former guest on this show, Andres. Andres from just over the hill where I live in Tunbridge. I think he'd join you in that. And maybe some of our local solar companies, as long as they weren't going to lose business, if they had a few spare solar panels that they're not going to use, maybe that could be the start of something good. Pretty grassroots, Henry.
Yes, I like that.
Hey, I'm going to point out an article. It is the lead article, and I was just talking to my partner about hydro the other day, and of course Vermont depends heavily on Hydro-Québec. As long as there's enough water in Quebec to keep providing that, I'm a little bit concerned. the lead story in this week's 7 days. Power drain. Hydropower facilities such as the one at the Green River Reservoir are being pressed to make waterways healthier. That's a good thing, but it could mean less green energy coming from Vermont-based hydro.
So there's a note in Bill's book, and I was just foraging for it, trying to quote it accurately, but I think I have it in memory probably pretty good.
Go for it.
The moving parts in a gasoline-powered car, there are 20,000 moving parts, and in an electric vehicle, there are 200.
Wow, that's a pretty big number.
So
show is wrapping up.
Efficiency.
All right, WFRLP South Royalton, thanks for joining us on Green Zine, and thanks to all our underwriters. And indeed, like this music says, the people need light. Bye, Henry.
Bye-bye.